Warning. This is a comedy podcast that provides an irreverent, sarcastic, less than serious look at events described in the Bible. It contains profanity and explicit content and may not be suitable for children under 14. Listener discretion and a sense of humor strongly advised.
In a world where the Holy Bible is actually a streaming television show with a gigantic special effects budget, two people boldly watch and review every episode. Join these scripture script doctors as they discuss all the on-screen drama and off-screen hijinks of this fictional hit series.
Welcome to Wrath of Pod. If you're new here, my name is Marcus.
And I'm Deanna. And last week seemed weirdly like a season finale. They had a clip show, they had a bunch of weddings, they had a bunch of funerals. I was definitely a little bit worried between last week and this week that they were just going to cancel the whole thing, that was like their big blowout. Sorry, guys, we're done. They pulled the plug in the middle of the season.
Maybe you don't fix the Bible.
It's broken. It doesn't make sense.
But this week, we are back with another full plate of Holy Bible shenanigans.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, I am pleased to be able to go back to the kind of pace that we were used to. So I am ready to talk about all of this stuff.
Me too. Let's jump in and discuss what's happening in Season 1, Episode 6.
Last time on Wrath of Pod.
Sarah dies. Abraham has to bury her. And he goes to talk to the sons of Heth.
Really embracing their metal roots. Abraham chatting with his oldest servant, saying, you got to find this wife for Isaac, but don't take Isaac with you. The servant's praying and saying, help me find the right woman. We get Rebecca, who comes to the well. Old servant brings out the bling. And then we get the whole story told again from word to word.
Do you want to go with this old dude and his 10 camels to marry this guy you've never seen? Rebecca wants out. So long, suckers.
They met Isaac on the way.
They had this little meet cute. Abraham passes away. Funerals are one of those times where all the good and all the bad come out.
So we start off with Rebecca. Bit of a turn. Turns out Rebecca can't have children. So Isaac, he's not too happy about this. So he pleads with God. He goes to the field, went down on his knees, interlocked his fingers, and basically yelled out to God, can you please get my wife pregnant? And God said, yes, I can. And he came down and God got her pregnant.
That tent was a rockin'.
It was awkward and it was tense. Because Isaac is now put in the position of having to ask God for a favor. They do not have the best of relationships. This was asking Abraham, Isaac's father, to sacrifice him on the mountain just to prove Abraham's loyalty. They've been a little bit at odds, and you could really see it from Isaac's body language. His head was turned away. He was looking down. I kind of liked it. I mean, I didn't like watching it. I was getting all secondhand embarrassment, but I liked that they were exploring that tension in their relationship.
So I think God was aware of that past when he came down. What did you make of how he appeared? Because there was that big puff of smoke and he appeared in scrubs.
What seems to be the trouble?
With those big gloves and gave a quick nod to Isaac, went in the tent, zipped the tent up, and then you heard some noises, and then he came out and said, she's pregnant, and poof, disappeared once again.
I think the turkey baster was an interesting touch there. I was getting Michael Jackson vibes, which was a little bit creepy. But I think God is now willing to be a little bit looser with some things. I think he was definitely playing it up. And I think it was really worth the troll for that look on Isaac's face after he comes out of the tent. I have never seen a man with his jaw that far down on the floor.
I didn't quite follow why God's fly was open, but maybe that was part of the elaborate troll. I don't know.
Well, Doc, is she here, isn't she?
She is.
Button your fly.
So anyway, God goes back up And we see Rebecca, her belly slowly increase. And so you understand that we're rapidly going through weeks here. And her pregnancy feels a bit tricky. She asks God what's going on. So God picks up and says, hang on, let me just check. He's got this big old tome that he's flicking through. I guess it must be some records of all the fetuses around the world at any given time. A Facebook of fetuses, if you like. In
ew.
It. That's kind of cute pictures. Oh, they're all little scans. They're all little scans.
Yeah. He's waving around the holy ultrasound wand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So he flicks to the page where Rebecca's baby is and sees there's two. It's twins.
Instead of just one perfect kid, Mom had the two of us. Way to go, Mom.
Wrong. The embryo did split in two, but it didn't split equally.
We then go to the birth. And so the first twin, Esau, comes out, and I gotta say, I spilt my beer when I saw this.
You read the Bible, Ringo?
Not regularly, no.
Well, there's this passage I got memorized.
Genesis 25, 24. Indeed, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob.
I never gave much thought to what it meant. I just thought it was some cold-blooded shit to say to a motherfucker before I popped a cap in his ass.
Of all the things that could have come out, a red, hairy kid.
Definitely. It was a little Hellboy, a little Teen Wolf. In
I wrote down like... Teen Wolf, too.
There we go.
I got Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
An explanation is probably long overdue.
An explanation! Jesus Christ, Dad, an explanation! Look at me!
Yeah, the props department had a fucking field day with this one. They really did it up. They just took everything out of the shop vac on the floor back in the costume department, and they glued it on this model. It was beyond. He comes out red, and then Elphaba and Wicked comes out green, and they can just do Christmas together. We can have a couple little Christmas babies. It's going to be adorable. I cannot wait for that merch. Get your ornaments here.
You're green. I am.
Yeah, it was sort of a mix Hellboy, Elmo, and Teen Wolf.
Yeah. Tickle me Hellboy, maybe?
Hooray! Make way for the little furry red monster parade! Hooray! Hooray! It's the little furry red monster parade!
Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. It was a little bit scary. So that is our first look at Esau, and obviously we'll have a lot more to say about him later, but wow, furry baby.
And Jacob comes out looking like a normal baby, actually.
Yeah, Esau comes out red and hairy. Jacob comes out normal, although I had a moment there where I'm like, oh God, he's going to be blue or purple or something. We're going to have M&M babies. But nope, Jacob came out a reasonable looking skin color. So it seems to be an affliction just for Esau.
Yep. And Esau grows up. We see him growing up to be kind of this hunter. He seems to be what the toxic parts of the internet call an alpha male. He's a hunter. Mm-hmm. And Jacob is more mild mannered, spending a lot of time in tents, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Mild mannered, but intense. Am I right?
Oh, nice.
I know. Me and your dad. Sorry, not sorry. Speaking of intense, they were showing a lot of blood when Esau was going out and hunting and carving up all of these creatures that he was catching. And Isaac loves it. Apparently, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach with a lot of blood and muscle tissue.
There's ribs. So tender. I have to say, it's straight on the plate with no real care, but it tastes phenomenal. This may be the first time I actually go back to the kitchen with an empty plate.
So Isaac's really playing favorites. You know that he likes Esau, not just because he's loving the meat, but because he actually says to Esau, you're my favorite child. Definitely unusual to hear a parent literally say that to someone's face. And Rebecca's actually a big fan of tents and really likes Jacob better. I couldn't tell if Isaac was liking Esau because of personal characteristics or if he was just doing basic Pavlovian conditioning. Kind of like the bell and the food, Pavlov's dogs. This is very much like the dinner and the child.
Yes.
And he's like, I like favorite child. I like you now. That felt like what was happening here, conditioning.
You said before that it's unusual to hear somebody actually say out loud, you are my favorite child. Not unusual for this show. This show has done this repeatedly. We're back to Cain and Abel. We're back to, we love the meat and we just don't like the fruit offerings. It's really surprising to me the extent to which they are still digging into this, because it has never gone well. And as we will see, it does not go well in this case either.
Right. And a little bit strange to have someone be so anti-vegetable. I guess some kids are. Maybe that's it. Maybe Isaac is just like a child. He's just like, I don't want vegetables anymore. And he just won't eat them.
Oh, you know what? That makes so much sense that Isaac would have gotten a little bit developmentally stunted because of what happened to him, because of this almost being sacrificed situation. I think you're totally right. There's a part of his internal psyche that's still very much childlike, very stuck on thinking about his mom, and he really does not like his broccoli.
Don't be too upset by what you see, gentlemen. After all, his actions are those of an immature, unbalanced mind.
So Esau's been out in the field doing a lot of work in from the daybreak to when the sun starts to go down. He's been out in the field and he's hungry. And you know how you never should go shopping when you're hungry for food?
Right.
This is basically what's happening here, I think. So Esau's coming in, feeling tired, feeling hungry, basically going to the supermarket hungry. But it's not the supermarket. It's his brother Jacob who's been making this stew. And Jacob, I guess, maybe he must know from past encounters that his brother, when he's hungry, will make interesting, odd decisions. What happens is, instead of the equivalent of filling up the shopping cart, we have Esau actually giving Jacob his entire birthright in exchange for the stew. That's how hungry he is. This is one hungry guy. He will give you his entire birthright. That's the deal for a bowl of stew.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit strange. I thought from Esau's perspective might have been a little bit of hyperbole. You know, we've all said this, like, oh man, that smells so good. I could die. I would give anything for some of that stew. And Jacob's like, done. I see you. I raise you one birthright. And Esau says, great. Lentil stew? Really? I mean, I've had some awesome food in my life. I've even had some awesome lentil stew, but that would not be the thing to sell my birthright for. I'm sorry. This guy just does not have very good taste. Have you ever had like a really, really lentil stew that's good enough to sell your future for? Maybe if it was like a chocolate tart, you could get me on board with that. Lentil stew is not doing it for me. What's working for you?
Oh, I don't know. I guess, I mean, baked beans on toast would do it for me. Good baked beans on toast.
That's basically a lentil stew.
No, it's not.
Yes, it's a bunch of, it's no. Like beans in liquid. What's the difference here? Okay, you heard it here first. The way to get Marcus to do anything. Baked beans on toast.
Lentil. That is the most bizarre. That is the strangest thing I've heard in a long time. Lentil stew is nothing like baked beans on toast.
No, I mean, all the legumes look the same to me. I'm sorry. I said it. Legumes, I can't tell the difference. They all look the same to me. No. I know we're about to get canceled by...
If we have any British listeners, they are going to be rioting at your comment. I will say that much. And I'll join them.
Okay. Okay.
Millions of little Britons have grown up great knowing beans, moons, hides.
So the next thing that happens is that there's a famine. So the family has to pick up and move. And they end up going to the land that our old friend Abimelech rules. It's called Gerar. And then... we did a repeat on the my wife is my sister bit. Abraham did it twice for Sarah. And now here is Isaac following in his father's footsteps, pretending that Rebecca is his sister instead of his wife. So he tells everyone, apparently including Abimelech, who is the king here, who had this same shit pulled on him just recently. He tells everyone that Rebecca is his sister. Hey, writers, I know it's rule of thirds, but it's not law of thirds. You don't have to do something three times. Who is writing in to this show being like, you know what we need more of? We need more of these men pretending that their wives are their sisters. Who is asking for this? No one is asking for this. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, it was totally strange. And it was also a callback quickly as well to the number of stars in the sky. So God tells Isaac, stay in the land and you'll get as many stars in the sky for your offspring, which again, we've heard before. So it was God bringing out the classics and the writers following it up with this.
Yeah, we're playing all the hits this week. But this doesn't work very well because Isaac and Rebecca, not very good operational secrecy. Isaac's going around telling everybody that Rebecca's his sister, and then he goes and fucks it up by snogging her in public. Dumb idea.
I mean, you say in public, but in fairness, they didn't realize they were in front of a two-way mirror with Abimelech drooling on the other side.
I think it was the fact that the two-way mirror was in a tent, and I'm pretty sure if I captured the label on the outside of this tent properly, it's actually Abimelech's dead mom's tent. And we know how Isaac is, right? He sees some tent that belongs to somebody's dead mother, and it just does it for him. So he's got to grab Rebecca and get in there real fast and do the business.
Yeah.
So that's how they got caught.
Yeah, I guess Abimelech only knew how to do the two-way mirror thing to spy on people. But Isaac, I guess, and Rebecca just weren't that curious about why the tent they went in had this giant mirror down half of it. Mm-hmm. Abimelech just said, don't look back there, whatever you do.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
And they sort of took it as said, and everything is revealed. In more ways than one.
Yeah. No, it was all out there. Definitely leave it to this show to sneak in the sex and nudity and the maybe or maybe not incest. I guess they're cousins, right? Slightly less incesty than we've had before. So Abimelech catches them and says, okay, dude, clearly she's not your sister. So he calls Isaac on the carpet and berates him for trying to trick him again.
Fool me once. Shame on you. It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
I was really on Abimelech's side here. He's annoyed at being tricked again by the son of the guy who did it last time. He really just lays into Isaac for this nonsense and solves the problem by telling all of his subjects here in Gerar, just leave these two alone. Don't touch them. Don't put hands on them. Don't bother them at all. Problem solved.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder about the number of times they've done this before, if they could have just done the same thing, right? Instead of this elaborate arrangement, could have just had someone in power say, yeah, just don't touch them.
You know, there are these people, you certainly know them, where they can't just come out and ask for the thing that they want. They have to do this whole Rube Goldberg device of like, oh, but if you do this, and then if you put that over there, and then you don't see me doing this thing, and then we're going at it in your dead mom's tent, then we can get what we want. Like, just grow a pair. Go talk to the king and say, hey, can you tell everybody to leave us alone? That's my hot tip.
It's a good tip.
We are nothing if not practical here at Wrath of Pod. Then we get into the wells. So Isaac and his family are staying in Gerar, and he's pretty rich. He's inherited quite a lot from Abraham. So we've got Nepo baby here, and he's getting even richer, which makes the Philistines, who are living in the area, very jealous. So in retaliation, the Philistines fill in all of the wells that were dug in Abraham's day.
Yeah, and then we talked before about how wells are the Bitcoin of the day. Well, the market's crashed. That's what's happened here. Just filled it all in.
This just keeps going back and forth. The Philistines fill in the wells. Isaac redigs the wells and finds a spring, which he claims, but then some people living in the area say the spring actually belongs to them. So he moves on. He finds another well. They argue over that one. And at that point, Abimelech comes to visit him. This again had those nice godfather-y vibes. Isaac asks why he's there. Clearly, Abimelech doesn't like him very much for pulling the wife's sister trick and for causing all of this ruckus over the wells. And Abimelech basically says that he's there for a truce. He wants them to make a promise that they're not going to harm each other, which seems fine to Isaac. Isaac agrees to this, and they have a feast to celebrate the truce.
Yeah, 100%. This is the family business now. Wells is the family business. It seems to be where the future dynasty will come from, all these wells.
So you want to hear my crazy headcanon about this?
Sure.
Do you remember last time we were talking about the ages of people and how maybe there's something up with the human genome or there's some alien interference? So here's what I'm on about. These wells, they're not digging for water. They're digging for some kind of de-aging serum. Because we've got Abimelech, who I don't know how the fuck old he is now, right? Like, he's done this wife and sister thing with Abraham and Sarah. And then Abraham and Sarah both died and had Isaac. And Isaac grew up and married Rebecca and they have sons and now they're back and Abimelech is still there. He must have some kind of access to one of those fountains of youth. And this is what they're digging for. This is why the thing about the wells is such a thing. They're not necessarily currency in themselves, but they can get you to this magical fountain of youth de-aging serum.
Can you translate the inscription?
Quis quis bibit aquam, who drinks the water I shall give him, says the Lord, will have a spring inside him welling up for eternal life.
So I'm putting some money that this is definitely going to be a major plot point moving forward.
That also makes sense about in the background of one of the wells, you can actually see someone being lowered headfirst into it, which I thought was unusual. Yeah. And that would make sense, being baptized, as it were, in the wells and getting some kind of revival. That's actually a plot point the writers may have taken from the Batman comics. Ra's al Ghul, who was also portrayed in the movie by Liam Neeson, in the comics, he had a pool that would regenerate you. But every time you go in and you come out a little bit more mentally unhinged each time.
I have used the Lazarus Pit too many times. I've lived 600 years. My mind and body cannot take much more. Each time I enter the pit, I am frightened of what will come out.
Oh, I like that. It's like a monkey's paw situation.
Also, I can't get this out of my head now. Why is it we say someone goes in and they come out more unhinged, but wouldn't that mean they are less hinged? Like, I'm saying more unhinged. Shouldn't it be like they are less hinged?
Less hinged. Yeah. Maybe it's just not fair to hinges. They do so much work for us, you know, every single door, and we just don't appreciate them. So maybe we should be thinking about the hinges.
Feeling sluggish from all the extra food, drinks, and celebrations? Kick off the new year with a science-backed reset. Quiksilver Scientific's Push-Catch Liver Detox is a patented, simple two-step system that supports your liver, gut, and whole body detoxification, helping clear out what's slowing you down so you feel energized for the year ahead. It's more than a cleanse. Quiksilver Scientific's Push-Catch Liver Detox helps reset your system. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Amen. You know who's back? Pickle's back.
Welcome back to episode 4 of Wrath of Pod. My weirdest name is the commander of the army, Pickle. I immediately hated this character.
Yes.
I hate pickles, and I hate pickle. Let's just say he put a sour taste in my mouth.
Oh, strong choice. We're bringing pickle back. That's a drink, right?
Is it?
Yes, absolutely. It's a shot of whiskey followed by a shot of pickle brine as a chaser.
Probably why it's not in my repertoire.
No? Okay, maybe I'm going to either better bars than you or worse bars than you. I don't know which one it is, but there's Pickleback. Unless it's a different pickle, is it Son of Pickle? If there's more than one of them, is it a peck of pickles?
You're starting into a rhyme there. A peck of pickles.
Yeah, I don't know.
Peter picked a peck of pickles. Pickles.
We've got Pickleback. It just makes me happy to see that guy again. He looks so weird and so amazing. This whole episode is just such a mess of serious drama and weird humor. And I think I like it. I don't know. It's two great tastes that may or may not taste good together.
Mm, that's nice. Yeah, a lot of random things coming in.
They're trying to be everything for everybody. I guess that's what you have to do to get television made these days. After the wells, we have another wedding. Esau gets married to two women. Interestingly, some family drama here. Isaac and Rebecca don't like them very much. Maybe they're just after his money. Probably he forgot to tell them that he sold his birthright for a bowl of lentil stew. So they probably still think that he's rolling in it. And one of Esau's wives, her name is Basemath. Obviously trying too hard. I think this is something she definitely picked for herself. Like while she was finding herself in her gap year or something, she decided she didn't want whatever name her parents picked out for her, and so she went with base math. Incredible.
It's after the wedding. Much later on, Isaac's eyes are failing. As we get older, where we can't quite see the text as small as we used to, this is happening to Isaac, and I guess there's not a CVS or a Rite Aid nearby where he can get a quick, cheap reading glasses. And he's feeling like, okay, I'm not going to last much longer here. Maybe he hasn't been to the well and got the regenerating liquid too recently. So he calls in Esau and says, I'm not sure how long I'm going to be lasting here, but I'm really hungry. So instead of having a talk and reminiscing, why don't you go out and bring me back some food? And when you come back, I've actually got this kind of superpower that I haven't mentioned before, and I have the ability to bless you. Basically, the idea is that by putting a blessing on him, then there'll be fortune in terms of descendants and wealth and all of that stuff. So this blessing must have been a power that the Lord gave Isaac off screen. Maybe it's a sorry. Honestly, that would explain things. If it was a sorry from God for that whole kill your son thing that happened when he was a boy, to actually say, you know what, you survived, you're here, here, I'll give you a one-time use only God blessing that you can give to a person of your choosing.
That explains a lot. I think we've gone 100% on the comic books here. You have something awful and tragic happen to you as a child, but now you have this superpower to make up for your terrible upbringing.
Isaac had an origin story.
Yes, yes. And then they're going to remake it in about 18 movies.
Yeah, and each movie would culminate in the one blessing that he can give. That's actually his only superpower, like a one-time use blessing.
Yep.
So Rebecca's overhearing this, and she's got her own plans. Because even though they're both Jacob and Esau are their kids, Rebecca actually prefers Jacob to quite a high degree. So she's listening to this, kind of got that glass against the door, hearing this, and is saying, okay, Jacob, guess what? I've got an idea. This one-time superpower blessing, I want you to be the result of it. I want you to get all the fortune. So what she does is she cooks up some goat and says to Jacob, here, take this to your dad and pretend to be your brother. Pretend to be Esau. So Jacob looks skeptically at her, quite understandably, because let's remind you, listener, that Esau is red and hairy. He is the combination of Elmo, Teen Wolf, and Hellboy. So Jacob, who looks like a normal person, is doing a double take to Rebecca and says, how is this going to work? Yeah, my dad hasn't got great eyesight, but he's not blind. And he can hear and he can feel and other things.
Genesis 27, 12. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be a deceiver to him, and I shall bring a curse on myself, and not a blessing. 27, 16. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats on his hands, and on the smooth part of his neck.
So Rebecca gets some goat skin that she just happened to have lying around. I guess if you're cooking goat, that's what happens. And she puts the goat skin on Jacob's arms and the neck so that he'll feel hairy like Esau. So now he's in this goat costume in order to pretend to be like his brother. What did you think of this?
I loved that they did a kind of Mission Impossible Ocean's 11 style heist for this. Rebecca's in the kitchen cooking the goat and she's describing the plan to Jacob. And they do that thing where they show what's going to happen before it happens as she's doing the voiceover for it. So let's just throw all the genres in here. And it had that kind of snazzy jazz music in the background. And she's showing how he's going to look when he's got the goat stew and he's all wrapped in the skins and pretending to be Esau and wearing Esau's clothes. And he's going to walk into the tent and he'll get the blessing from Isaac. No problem. And then we get that cut back to Jacob's face where he's listening to her describe the plan. And he is just completely dumbfounded. Like, how the fuck is this going to work, Mom?
Yeah, 100%. And so after Jacob is dressed, he goes in to Isaac. And Isaac, understandably, is sort of suspicious. They kind of played their hand a little too quickly here. Because Isaac had only relatively recently told Esau to go and get the food. I mean, it takes a while to hunt and to drag it back, let alone prepare it. So he was understandably saying, what is happening here? And why does your voice sound like Jacob's? That for me would be a big giveaway, right? If you're not even disguising your voice, you're just like, hi, it's Esau. And you're like, you didn't have a British accent before. What was going on? That would give it away for most people.
Yeah. Rebecca did not count on this when she was making the plan. Rebecca did not count on the fact that Jacob is a really bad liar. I think she thought that he was going to do a little bit of a better job playing a role here, but he is just not up to this task, right? He's a mild man dwelling in tents. He's not used to this kind of subterfuge. So she really put him up to it. And I think he didn't quite get into the role before he went in there.
I'm not a spy. I'm nothing. I'm naval lint. I have to lie to women to get laid. And I don't score much. I got a little dick. It's pathetic.
So Jacob's wearing Esau's clothes, and Isaac is relying heavily on his touch here, feeling the hair, the fur that he's used to having from Esau. And he's also smelling Esau on those clothes. And so he basically says, yeah, you smell like Esau. My bad. You must be Esau. Never mind the voice. The smell and the touch like override it for him. I guess he must just do it in a basic summing. You know, he's like, well, the voice doesn't match, but these other two do. I'm convinced. And he blesses Jacob mistakenly. He gives his blessing. And I think here we have, maybe they want a spin-off, but they have the origin story of the villain, Goatman, in his goat costume, blessed through deception. Whatever power or fortune he has, perhaps he only gets the benefits when he puts on his goat costume and he goes out into the night dressed as a goat.
Well, well, you took my advice about theatricality a bit, literally.
And I like God just watching all of this. So God is in his living room with his million-inch TV, just watching what's going on. And I like that he had respect knuckles for Rebecca. Like, way to go, Rebecca, pulling the wool over Isaac's eyes, slightly literally. God has a real game-recognized game look on his face. Like, yeah, girl, you thought that Esau was going to get in there first, and you made this plan, and you snuck Jacob in there without it being too suspicious. I feel like God definitely stepped up on his respect for her. Frankly, I, as an audience member, really stepped up on my respect for Rebecca here. I love how she is really active in this episode. She's got something that she wants to make happen, and she is pulling all of the strings to get her way. You go, girl.
Yeah, God was loving it. I could tell because he, eating that popcorn, he didn't even have to look over. He just put his hand in the popcorn bucket and stuffed it in his face. He was really into it. He was enjoying it. Now we have the reveal where Esau finally comes back from hunting and brings his food to Isaac. So Isaac's like, wait, what has just happened? Oh, Jesus, I only had my one-time blessing and I've given it to the wrong son. Fuck. So understandably, Esau's pretty freaking upset because he was going to get this gift, this power. But instead, Isaac, I would say Isaac was looking sheepish, but maybe goatish is more accurate. Yeah, so Isaac then said, well, look, I gave my one superpowered, God-powered blessing, but I'll bless you as well. Here, I bless you. And nothing happens. Before, when he gave it, you saw this glow, this light around him for a few seconds. It sort of transferred. It came out of his hand and went and glowed, and then it disappeared. But I think at this point, it was just like the same as you or me or anyone else saying, I bless you. It's like, oh, that's nice, but it's not actually doing anything. It's not superpowered. And so Esau was not particularly happy because he's now got to basically serve his brother.
Yeah. And this was a tremendous performance from this actor. I felt a little bit like Cain and Abel again. Like, the writers think that the audience sympathy is going to be with one brother, but it's actually with the other brother. I was completely on Esau's side here. The last thing he heard is his father's about to die and he needs to go out and bring him this one last meal, and he's going to get the blessing. And then Isaac has to tell him that he gave the blessing to the other son. And it's really heartbreaking. Esau's plea, have you only one blessing? Bless me also, my father. Please bless me. And he's got those tears hanging at the corners of his eyes like, oh, God, this is going to be somebody to watch. Fantastic performance out of this actor.
Yeah, fantastic performance. And also nice to switch things up to actually go to a montage. Rocky kind of working out montage. Esau in the gym, doing weights, putting camo on his face to hunt down his brother. And Rebecca sees all this happening, basically sees him working out and puts two and two together. and says, okay, Jacob, go and stay with my brother, Laban, until Esau's had a time to kind of just cool down. And as a way of explaining why Jacob's gone away, Rebecca tells Isaac that she doesn't want Jacob to marry any of the daughters of Heth. And so she's saying, hey, I'm going to send him away so that he doesn't get into the siren's call of the daughters of Heth.
This was so sad to me because, as we know, the sons of Heth are super cool and chill. Are the daughters of Heth just trouble, or is this just an excuse from Rebecca to send Jacob away? I want to believe in my heart that all of the children of Heth are amazing, and that this is just shade from Rebecca to paper over the fact that Jacob had to leave in a hurry.
No, I agree. I think the daughters of Heth were pretty cool. I think it was kind of Joan Jett kind of characters. And I just think that it was a kind of older person, you know, what is this rock and roll nonsense, etc.
Their jeans are a little bit torn and they have tattoos and we can't have that. And you're like, Rebecca, I do like you a lot, seriously, but also chill out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rebecca tells Jacob to go away until his twin brother has a little bit of a chance to cool down over this whole stolen birthright, stolen blessing thing. She sends Jacob away for a couple of days. Couple of days? Lady, you're cray. Or Esau is the most distractible person in the universe. But a couple of days, that is not going to be enough time for him to get over this whole missing out on the magical, mystical, one-time-only God-granted blessing that he was supposed to have had. Wow.
Yeah, that's true. It got a little bit overly optimistic from Rebecca. I guess it would reduce, you know, the immediate raw time, just give him time to sleep on it and to start to come to terms with it. Maybe so he doesn't make any hasty, regrettable decisions that are non-reversible decisions. So, yeah, I guess it was just doing what they can.
Yeah. You'll feel better in the morning. We all feel better in the morning. Just sleep on it. Mm-hmm. You'll realize you didn't want the super special, magical goat man blessing anyway.
And Isaac's agreeing with Rebecca and sends Jacob away to find his wife among the cousins, the children of Rebecca's brother, Laban. So Esau overhears Isaac talking to Jacob about this and telling him, no, don't marry one of those daughters of Heth from Canaan. And so Esau marries a third wife, someone who's the descendant of Ishmael, which we'd met previously.
So kind of a wedding to try to get himself back into his parents' good graces, because they didn't like his previous wives. And I was reading on one of those gossip sites on the internet where I know I shouldn't be, but it was late at night, you do this. So the actor who plays Esau is actually dating the actress who plays his new wife, which I think explains why they were grossly all over each other in this wedding scene. It was like, it was a little bit too much.
So we reached that part of the episode where I ask you, Deanna, what was the weirdest name?
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Say my name.
Bigus.
You're goddamn right.
I have a very great friend in Rome called Bigus Dickus.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait, no, seriously, what's your actual name?
Wait, your Bigus Dickus hears of this.
My weirdest name for the week comes from the scene where Abimelech and, of course, Pickle, the commander of his army, come to visit Isaac to settle this truce about this whole well digging and well filling in. And the other person who they come with is a friend of Abimelech, whose name is Ahuzath. And it just sounds like a sneeze. And it was just totally ridiculous every time Abimelech had to introduce him. It's like, hello, this is Pickle, the commander of my army. And Ahuzath.
That's my name. What is this? Derek. What? Derek
is your name?
Yes. What kind of name is that?
Well, it's my name.
Bit unusual, isn't it, Mr.
So, for that reason, he's getting my vote this week for weirdest name.
Nice.
How about you?
So my name is actually of a location, place. So it is Padanaram. No, Padanaram. Padanaram. Fuck. How do you say it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Is that what it's called? It's called Bananarama?
Padanaram. Padanaram.
Isn't that one of those airlines that went bankrupt a while ago?
Sounds a lot like it. But the reason I chose it was just from how they said it, because they said Padanaram. Da 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 da. Padanaram. Da 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 da. Padanaram. Da 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 da. And so on. So I like that.
We've got all Muppets this week.
Manamana. Manamana. Manamana.
Good choices all around. So as we're wrapping up our review of this week's episode, I will ask the other question that we ask at the end. What do we think about this god character?
I am not the god of war. I am the god of truth.
God likes to watch. He's a prankster.
Blasphemy. You're lucky I don't cast you out or smite you or something.
You've been doing a lot of complaining about me. Quite frankly, I'm tired of it.
How shall we fuck off, O Lord?
Well, we didn't see much of him this episode compared to past episodes. I would say it was nice to see him watching and enjoying what's happening. Great to see new costumes. I love a costume change. Seeing him dressed in those scrubs when he beamed down was pretty cool. It was nice. Mm-hmm. But one thing I will note is that I still wonder about what happened when Isaac received the blessing that he was able to give, that power. It had to have come from God, directly or indirectly, but we didn't see it. I wonder if that ended up on the cutting room floor, or I wonder if it's going to be, you know, sometimes they'll do like between season bonus scenes or something like that to keep interest alive. I wonder if it's going to be an online only little scene, because you can imagine how you'd want to put special effects and it would be quite a eye-catching kind of scene to have online to convince people to watch.
And to keep paying for their subscription to this premium streaming service so they can get the commercial-free version of these episodes. The main things that we see God doing is being very interested in obstetrics, maybe a bit of a frustrated doctor in there. I think his parents probably pushed him towards the law, but he was really more interested in studying medicine. So I think any chance he gets, he's going to go open up some wombs. He's going to close up some wombs. He's going to check for pregnancies. He's going to grab his holy ultrasound machine. So good for him on that. And the only other thing I wanted to mention about God in particular, but the episode in general, is I just want to see more stuff blowing up. We were promised that. The trailer for this season had a lot of explosions in it, and so far all we've seen is Sodom and Gomorrah. Can we go back to the part where God is smiting some stuff, please? I think he works a lot better as a character when he has that kind of big, powerful, making things happen role. I like him in the background for these last two episodes, but I'm ready to see God come back in a bigger way and start blowing some more shit up again.
A blessing from the Lord.
Before Deanna and Marcus wrap up this episode, I am here to tell you that my 11th commandment is, you shall not enjoy this podcast without rating and reviewing it.
Good idea, O Lord.
Help others to find this podcast by rating and reviewing it on your podcast app. Now let's return to the action.
God be praised.
Me be praised. God out.
I wonder if in a future episode we'll find out that when he hasn't been interfering in Earth, he's been doing something with another planet, creating a few other planets. And maybe we'll go there. That could be what he's doing, because I know we saw him watching with the popcorn and we've seen him when he's on the phone and he's been at home. But what's he doing during the day? It could be that he's trying this whole experiment again on a different planet. I wonder if in the future down the road we'll see that. I don't know.
That would be interesting. I did like seeing him on the couch eating popcorn in his god jammies. They looked like a really nice, soft, silky material. So I like that God likes to be comfortable when he's at home watching TV. But yeah, he could be off doing something else. He could be working with the aliens who are putting the de-aging serum in the wells. Maybe there's some sort of backstory that's going to be revealed about those interactions in future episodes. So until then, we will say, Pod be with you, and amen.
Amen.
To continue the conversation, follow us on social media at Wrath of Pod. To get in touch, email us at mail@wrathofpod.com. Pod be with you.
All views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and are presented for entertainment and commentary purposes only. Any third-party music, clips, or other media are included solely for the purpose of critique, commentary, review, or transformative use, all of which fall within fair use. We make no claim of ownership over included third-party material, which remains the property of its respective owners. This podcast is not affiliated with, endorsed by, or sponsored by any of the creators, owners, or distributors of included media.